Jewish audio on Kabod.org.
All right. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we're going to conclude the verses that correspond to the letter Gimel. David HaMelech has spent time talking about various things in the letter Gimel. We had two classes on this. We talked about Hashem giving the grace that David HaMelech beseeches Hashem for. And we talked about, which means he was going to, you know, see wonders in Hashem's Torah. That was the grace he asked for. And then we talked about David HaMelech's being like a stranger, like being estranged from the material reality, living in a higher state of consciousness, and David HaMelech feeling a sense of inner nullification, or even that his soul was crushed as he yearned for Hashem's Torah so much. So the first four verses of the corresponding Gimel were David HaMelech's yearning, David HaMelech's desires, David HaMelech's feelings of inadequacy as he sought to enhance and to deepen his knowledge of Torah. And now, David HaMelech is going to talk about his Torah study, but for the first time, he's going to acknowledge the various detractors that he had. And I think this is meaningful, not only because of what's being said, but the order in which it's being said. Far too often, people, especially Jewish people, define themselves dialectically. So a dialect is the specific arena or area in which you live. Like, for example, in language, people use a particular dialect that identifies them as which place they come from, the way people pronounce words. So even when we speak English, the dialect tells you where in Canada, or if from Canada, or where from the United States, or where from South Africa or Australia or Great Britain. You can actually tell by the dialect certain nuances, certain words, or the way certain vowels are pronounced, you know where somebody's from. So that's the meaning of a dialect, is another word for a province or a specific area. And defining yourself dialectically means you define yourself vis-a-vis those around you. So because everybody hates me, therefore I am Jewish. Or because I'm fighting anti-Semitism, and because I'm against racism and xenophobia, so that gives me my Jewish cause. My cause for being Jewish is never again. That's who I am. Because there was Nazis trying to kill me, so now I'm Jewish and I scream never again. But that's all wrongheaded. We're not defined by Auschwitz or Nazis. We're not defined by anti-Semites or fake Palestinians. We're defined by Torah. We're defined by Hashem. We are not because there are others who dislike or even hate us. That's not what makes us who we are. We are because we are. We do because we do. It's a positive thing. It happens to be that there are also challenges, that there are also those around us, and sometimes that serves to frame things in a little more sharp contrast. But that doesn't define us. We shouldn't be defined by our enemies. We shouldn't be defined by our detractors or by those who seek to obstruct our own spiritual progress. We should be defined by the spiritual progress we seek, regardless of what's going on around us. And the first thing that David HaMelech does when he defines himself or defines his calling is he talks about the yearning that he has. He talks about what he seeks. He talks about the wonders that he wants to discover. He talks about the fact that he feels estranged from everybody around him. He's not defining himself by everybody around him. He's geron achibaretz. I don't even know what's going on around me. I can't even relate to what's going on around me. Garson nafshi. This is an inner thing. David HaMelech experiences inner turmoil, an inner sense of being crushed. But obstructions are obstructions, and we do have to live in a society. And the fact is that when people get in our way, it impacts us. It doesn't have to be negative, but it will make it more challenging for us. So how do we deal with our detractors? How do we deal with people who inhibit our faith or maybe mock the things that we're doing? And everybody has an experience like this on some level. So the question is, how do you deal with it? Well, how did David HaMelech deal with it? So the first thing that David HaMelech says is, I know who I don't want to be like. I know what I don't want to do. And this is a really interesting way that verse 21 begins, because as you'll see, it speaks in past tense, but it may well be speaking about the future. Go'arta zedim arurim. So the word go'arta, very literally, would be translated as a rebuke. Go'arta zedim are those who rebelliously or wantonly desecrate Hashem's name, And David HaMelech says they are Zaydim Arurim. They are rebellious individuals, people who seek to undermine God and godliness, and they do so with a sense of vociferousness, and therefore they are cursed. David HaMelech says they're cursed people. So Ga'arta Zaydim Arurim, you have rebuked these Zaydim Arurim, these wanton, rebellious individuals, Hashegim Mimitzvesecha, who mistakenly wander from your Torah. Now, this in and of itself is already a contradiction. Because if there are Zaydim, the word Zaydim is connected to the Hebrew word bimezid, which means to do something mindfully and willingly and wantonly. I am going against the will of Hashem. A shogeg, by contrast, is something which is done inadvertently or mindlessly or unknowingly. So David HaMelech begins by talking about Zaydim Arurim, and then he talks about Hashegin Mimitzvesecha. So the first place we're going to look, just to get a little bit of clarity here, is in the Mitzudas David. Mitzudas David says, Ra'isi, I see, Asher Me'olam, Go'arta, B'Zaydim Arurim. This is not a particular event. This is David HaMelech's, let's say, reading of history. So his read of history is that they are the Zaydim, Arurim, or are always being rebuked. So when people veer from the path of Hashem, go away from the way Hashem wants them to live the life, they're always going to be rebuked. Asher heim shegim mitzvesecha, which they inadvertently go off the path of your mitzvahs. But why do they go off the path of the mitzvahs? Why do they make these mistakes? And this is the key. Mitzudas David says, the reason is, ba'avur zadon libam, because of their rebellious hearts. And the rebellious hearts are in Asher lo ilamdu. Don't teach me. Don't tell me. I know already. I know everything. I don't have to learn. So therefore, lo ilamdu. They didn't learn. Once you don't learn, what happens? You make mistakes because you don't learn. But who decided you shouldn't learn? Who forced you to be ignorant? That was a choice you made. So that's not a mistake. That's a zaydin. That's something you did on purpose. And therefore, David HaMelech is contrasting himself. I am not like that. The Zaydim Arurim, who are Shegim and Mitzvei Secha, who refuse to learn your Torah, who refuse to dedicate themselves to Jewish education, and therefore they make all these inadvertent mistakes, but they're responsible for the inadvertent mistakes. That's what I don't want to be like. In other words, David HaMelech, instead of defining himself by what others don't do, David HaMelech first defines himself as who he is. And only after he positively defines himself as one who seeks Torah and one who wants to have a deep appreciation of Hashem's wisdom, he says, and I note that the Zaydim Arurim, that you rebuke the Zaydim Arurim. So, and not, this is the behavior I don't want to engage in. So David HaMelech merely frames this. First he draws the picture, then he puts the frame on. Most people are busy worrying about the frame. They forget about the picture. It's an empty picture in the end. They're framed with never again and Auschwitz and Holocaust and suffering and hatred and persecution. So, okay, well, what are you? I don't know what I am. I just want to be free. Free to do what? Free to be a regular person. Okay, so what do I want to be Jewish for? Just give it up. Just forget about the whole Jewish thing. Why are you fighting for Jewish culture? Why fight for culture? Why die for culture? Why suffer for culture? Just give it up. So when you focus on frame, it doesn't make any sense. But you have a beautiful picture, then the frame enhances it. So David HaMelech first talks about who he is. He says, what am I? And afterwards he says, Go'arta Zaydim Arurim, Hashegim Mitzvesecha. This is a very literal read. We're gonna probe a little more deeply. But first, I want to take you to a fascinating Mishnah. And this is a Mishnah which is found in Pirkei Avot, in the Ethics of Our Fathers. And you'll see that this ideal that David HaMelech expresses here is actually later codified in the Mishnaic form. Rabbi Yehuda, who Rabbi Shbatz tells us is Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Eloi, was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, he said like this. This is found in the 12th or 13th Mishnah of the 4th chapter. Hevei zohir b'talmud. You should be very, very careful when you study Torah. You should do it carefully. Sheshigigas talmud oila zodin. Because a mistake that comes from lack of learning, or I should have known that, but I didn't, oila zodin, that equals a wanton violation. since you should have known better, and you chose not to know better, or you didn't choose to make the effort to know better, Oilazadin. As the Sepharno says, Sheshagagta Mashalelomadata. You made the mistake because you didn't learn. But why didn't you learn? Because you were unable? He says, no. Machmas hisrashlus eilazadin. If it's because of laziness, so then that is a choice you made. It's a choice you made. Now, the truth is, nobody ever has time for anything. Life is very busy. Everybody always has time for the things that are important. God forbid there's a funeral to attend, we find the time. There's some kind of extenuating circumstance, we find the time. But it happens to me always. I say to people, you know, why don't you come learn a little? Oh, Rabbi, I'm so busy. I have no time. Nobody has any time. So we never have time for anything unless it's really important. And therefore, if somebody is living a life which is not the way the Torah expects it to be, and you're not fulfilling your destiny, and the reason is because you couldn't be bothered, and you couldn't find the time to learn Torah, that's Eilazadin. That's a choice you made. That's not an accident. Sure, it was inadvertent. But the reason that you didn't have the knowledge so that you came to this inadvertency was because you didn't spend the time studying Torah. So this is actually a Mishnah. And this Mishnah, many, many, many years later, of Rabbi Yehuda, encapsulates, especially as the Sepharno explains it, encapsulates the concept that David HaMelech is talking about here in Ge'arta Zeidim Arurim. Now, the truth is that this idea, if you take a look in the Radak actually alludes to this in even more clear fashion. He says, the problem with Ge'arta is that it's past tense. That's the problem, it's past tense. But David HaMelech should be speaking future. Here's what's going to happen. So Metzudas, David says, he's not speaking about an actual event. It's a general observation. But the Radak says, no, sometimes we have oiva, ovar, b'mokam osid. Sometimes we speak about things in the past tense, but as they will be in the future. It's a biblical tense. And he says that this is more than just a rebuke. He says something very interesting. He says, this is lashon hashchasa. That it's a language of destruction. Something is going to be torn apart, blown apart. And he says, Tigar hazeidim arurim, that these zeidim arurim are going to be, so to speak, accosted by Hashem because of what they did. So I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think this is one way of understanding pshat. The first time we find the word migaras, which is like a strong rebuke. It's found in the Tillim, in the ninth chapter of Tillim also. But the first time we find such a word is when you start to study Chumash with Rashi, in one of the first psukim of the Torah, where it talks about the creation of an atmosphere. The Torah talks about a water which is not water as we know it today. And he talks about the outer reaches of the atmosphere, and then the atmosphere becoming as we know it today, which is primarily made of air or gas rather than liquid. So he says that Hashem, there was some kind of frightful blast that came from Hashem. He uses the terminology in the Chumash, Hashem yelled or screamed, but it probably was some kind of cosmic blast that would be, in English, be called an explosion. And as a result of this blast or explosion of Hashem, say, Yehi Rokia, all of a sudden, the atmosphere congealed, or the atmosphere hardened as it is now. The atmosphere formed. So this wasn't just a rebuke. A rebuke is a euphemism. The rebuke is a euphemism for a very harsh rebuke. Like, you know, sometimes they say in English that if you're getting a harsh rebuke, somebody ripped into me. Or somebody, he ripped him apart. That's the kind of rebuke we're talking about. This is not a, you shouldn't do that. Not appropriate. This is more like one of those intense, full-blooded rebukes that rips the person apart. And that's what Radak seems to understand when he says that this garas is l'shen hashchasa. Rip apart is hashchasa. It's a euphemism, obviously, but that's what it means. And he says, and why? Why are they there? After all, that it's an accident. They're shoygim. He emphasizes. Same idea. He says, because heim zeidim bibit lalimud. That they are wantonly and purposefully choosing not to learn. And because they choose not to be educated, therefore, shegim min ha-mitzvahs. So, Radak introduces another thing here. He says, what's the difference David HaMelech is saying? He's drawing a difference between himself and between what's going on around him. And he says, this is not to be construed in an act of evil or wickedness, as we would tend to think of it, you know, with red skin, a pitchfork, and a tail and horns, something horribly evil. Somebody's going to choose to do a bad thing. He says, it's all about what is your focus of life. What's your passion in life? He says, they're interested in all kinds of narishkeit. They fill their days with all kinds of foolishness. But the one thing they don't want to do is buckle down and study Hashem's Torah. That's the one thing they don't want to do. And he says, and that's the difference between me and them. My detractors have a life filled with narishkeit, and I have a life which is filled with purposeful Torah study. And David HaMelech is encouraging us. That's how we should live. So how do you deal with your detractors? You kind of don't deal with them. You know what's wrong. You look around. You observe what others are doing sometimes to know what you shouldn't do. Not that you should judge them. Not that Hashem, that's Hashem's job. Ga'arta arurim zeidim. Hashem will deal with that. But you learn from what others are doing, which is inappropriate, which is clear to you, that's not appropriate. You learn what you should do. Not only what you shouldn't do. Learn what you should do. From a vacuous and empty kind of existence, you learn that you should have an existence which is contentful and meaningfully directed. So that's the literal meaning of Ga'arta, and that's how David HaMelech frames the detractors that he had. Now, the Chidah has a totally different take on this, actually. The Chidah says that this is a continuation of the pasuk before. In the pasuk before, in verse 20, it said, Garsa nafshi l'sava, which we translated as, my soul is crushed. My soul is crushed as with a yearning, with a craving, el mishpatecha b'chaleis. And then it continues, Ga'arta zeide marurim. So the Chidah says like this. David HaMelech said, it's true, my soul is crushed with a yearning, and my sole interest, if you will, is to learn Torah. It's to deepen Hashem's knowledge. But he says, when a mitzvah presents itself, when something has to be done, I don't get hung up on what I want to do. I say, what has to be done? So I leave behind the study that I love, and I do what is necessary so that the mitzvahs could actually be performed. But he says, the Zeidim Arurim, who become so focused only on their Torah study, they become academic Jews. It's all about education. They don't do anything about it. It's not practically or pragmatically oriented. It's just study. It's just theoretical. It's just nice ideas. But it's nice ideas that don't translate themselves into any kind of practice. He says, that's profoundly problematic. That's a cursed way to live. And David HaMelech saying, he's really like alluding to what the Gemara says in Yevamos. The Gemara says, Kol ha'omer, ein li ela Torah. The person who says, I only have Torah. That's what I do. So let somebody else do mitzvahs. I focus on Torah. We focus on education. That's what our focus is. So afilu Torah ein lo, that person does not even have the benefit of Torah. Because the only way you can benefit from Torah, which is an academic experience and an intellectual experience, is if it's complemented with action. And the action has to be taken. You have to know when to interrupt what you love. You love to study, and that's beautiful. And you're yearning for it, and your soul is crushed for it. And so it's very nice. But make sure that when mitzvahs come along, that you know how to stop your passion for learning, and you actually put into action the ideals and ideas that you've ingested. So that's how there's a continuation. And according to the Chidah, the Zeid Marurim is much more subtle. It may not be that they don't want to learn. They may actually be educating themselves. This is the problem of Jewish education that is only academic, where we learn ideas, but it has nothing to do with a way of life. And this is very prevalent today, unfortunately. People think it's a big mitzvah, a wonderful thing, just to increase awareness and education. Of course it is, but awareness and education has to lead us somewhere. Imagine learning about charity and the virtues of being of sharing and caring, but never doing anything good for anybody else. What value would it have? Be a wasted exercise. You learn about Yiddishkeit and you talk about Jewish knowledge, you talk about Jewish awareness, talk about Hashem, but when it comes to actualizing God's presence by doing what Hashem wants, we're too busy. We're too busy learning about it. What is that going to result in? There's a whole mystical movement today, you know, with lots of Hollywood stars. They're busy studying the greatest mystical secrets. Yeah, how about actually doing what it says in the Torah? Oh, please, that's like, look. Who has time for that? We're much too educated. We're much too lofty. We're obsessed with lofty things. That's what we focus on. Well, if that happens, afilu teira ein lei, then you don't even have the concept of Torah. So that's what the Chidah says. And I want to share with the Malbim has a very interesting take on this, but you know, I have a little twist on the Malbim's words. I want to tell you what the Malbim says. I'm going to tell you the way it seems to me. So the Malbim says that the Zeidim Arurim, that these cursed, rebellious individuals, are rebellious about the idea of faith in Hashem. So because that's, they're rebellious about faith, they don't want to accept anything. So he says, their mistake is that they're using their own ideas and their own rationale to come to their own conclusions. That's the problem. And David Amel says that's a terrible thing. He says you cannot study Torah, quote-unquote, open-mindedly or critically. We'll study Torah critically. We'll analyze it. We'll do some critical thinking. We'll evaluate it. And we'll see if we accept this part of the Torah or we don't accept this part of the Torah. Also very prevalent today. David Amel says, no. That's not what I meant. When I said, Garsa Nafshi L'Sava, it was El Mishpatecha. It was your rules, your ordinances, not just the study of Torah. But he says, Ga'arta Zeidim Arurim, he realizes and understands that Hashem will rip apart the Zeidim Arurim, HaShegim Mitzvei Secha, and the Malbim emphasizes, Shegim Mitzvei Secha, they turn the Torah away from its literal meaning. They interpret the Torah in beautiful ways that do not necessitate action. That don't require any kind of behavioral change. I don't have to do anything. These are ideas. And you can twist ideas and turn ideas and pull ideas. I often hear people who come from certain political bents or certain social movements which have ideas which have nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. They're not Yiddishkeit based. They're based on other ideas. But they're always talking about how it has a Jewish value to it. And they'll invoke a pasuk of the Torah or a saying of our sages, which is kind of awkwardly squeezed in to make it fit, and it doesn't really fit, and it's not really what it says. But it's my Jewish values. No, it's not. It's your other values. It's your values you espouse. It's what you learned in college or university or were brainwashed by somebody else at some point, of whatever it is, the life you chose to lead. It's not your Jewish values. You're basically abusing Jewish values. You're abusing Torah and you're perverting and twisting the Torah to fit in. You have your conclusions made already. You're just twisting the Torah now that Torah should be able to fit into this. And I'll give you an extreme example of this. This was actually an article written a number of years ago, and it was like beyond pathetic, but this was actually an article written in that particular milieu. And this was an article about the Hanukkah and global warming. That was I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, and printed in a very prominent paper. And the writer of the article, who called herself a rabbi, she said that her recommendation was that this year we should light one flame less on Hanukkah. We should have one flame less to save the atmosphere. Right, like that's partially going to make all the difference. Like you have one flame less. You get into your big SUV and drive to your big mansion, but if you have one flame less on your Hanukkah menorah, that's going to be a contribution to the environment. And that's how Hanukkah should be celebrated. But besides that, it goes against the spirit of Hanukkah, because the whole idea of Hanukkah is to add light. That's the whole point of Hanukkah. Every night we add light. So here is a person abusing the Torah and saying, no, Hanukkah is about saving the environment. And what's the proof? In the Haftorah of Hanukkah, we have this image of Yehoshua. And Yehoshua, Kohen Gadol, is wearing soiled garments because his children did not keep the ways of Yiddishkeit. And there's a menorah over there. So what do you see? You see a menorah. In the menorah, there's these olive trees. And the olive trees are pouring olives, oils pouring from the tree into the bowls and from the bowls into the menorah. And so the writer of the article says, you see, Hanukkah is about trees. It's organic. It's about trees growing from the ground, oil growing from the ground. So therefore, my Jewish values impel me to light one Hanukkah flame less this year to save the environment, and this is Judaism. So you really have to be very, very brainwashed to actually say, well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, that, of course, that is Judaism. That's exactly what the Torah wants. Right? But here's a person who has their own ideas, nothing to do with Judaism. How do I fit Judaism into this? Oh, the Haftorah talks about a tree. That's it. If it's a tree, it must be we're saving the environment. It's so clear, it's so obvious. Now, this is just an extreme example. By the way, there are some people who think it's a beautiful article and it's wonderful. They don't know what my problem is. But I think most of you understand that's totally off the beaten path. And in subtle ways, there are many, many ideas and ideals which are not about Yiddishkeit. They're against halacha. Open and shut against halacha. But a person could wax on and utilize Torah literature and verses of prophecy and twist them and turn them under a certain light and make them look a certain way. Well, all of a sudden it starts to refract some alien light and some strange ideal. And this is, of course, a big aveira. It's called Megala Panim B'Teirish Leik HaHalacha. And the Mishnah says one of the things that disqualifies a person from Olam Haba is to utilize the Torah against the Torah. That's not cute. It's not nice. It's not funny. And it's really a rachmanus on people who do this. But this is what David HaMelech, according to the Malbim, was saying. David HaMelech was raging against those Ga'arta Zeidim Arurim. They're Zeidim Arurim. They're going against Hashem. They're Shegim Mitzvah Secha. They're turning the Torah away from mitzvahs. By the way, the Malbim was fighting this in his day. He lived in the middle of the 19th century. This was all the rage, right? This is the Reformation, quote-unquote, of Judaism, where you could have ideas, but they didn't have to result in mitzvahs. That's what he was fighting. So the Malbim, through the prism of his own experiences, says, that's the people that David HaMelech was lashing out at. When he says, Go'arta Zeyda Marurim HaShoigim, he interpreted the word Shoigim not as mistaken, but as twisting, turning, pulling away from the mitzvahs of Hashem. I think there's truth to what he says. I think there's definitely truth to what he says. But I think it goes a little bit deeper. So what does David HaMelech represent? We're dealing with symptoms. But let's go back to the source of this. David HaMelech represents what we call bittul. He renounced himself. It wasn't about me. He says, Gersa nafshi, my soul is crushed. This wasn't about self-expression, or I would like to express myself through the prism of Torah, use the gestalt of Torah for my own ideas, but rather, Gersa nafshi, he felt himself imploded, and all he was yearning for was Mishpatecha b'choleis, at all times yearning for Mishpatecha. So David HaMelech represents bittul. And what is the height of the opposite of bittul, the height of gaiva, the height of arrogance? Where a person comes along, we're going to now engineer the Torah. We're going to fix the Torah. You know, because the Torah is problematic. The Torah is chauvinistic, or the Torah is time-dated, or the Torah is twisted, the Torah has some bad ideas. We have to now cleanse the Torah. We have to perfect the Torah. We have to remove the toxins and the dross and the inappropriatenesses, and then we can make Torah, we can modernize Torah, we can make Torah good again. We can have Torah that it fits our society. Sounds like a very wonderful thing. Except if you stop and think for a moment, the one who says that basically is saying that Torah doesn't come from Hashem. Because it comes from Hashem, it has to be perfect. Teres Hashem Tamima. God is perfect, His Torah is perfect. So if you have to engineer the Torah and twist the Torah and introduce new mores into the Torah because Torah is problematic, that means Torah was made by people. People change. Moralities of people's self-moralities changes, people's ethos change. Of course, every civilization had things that one civilization rejected, another civilization embraced, and vice versa. But the Torah is above that, it transcends that. And this is ultimately the big question. Are you trying to superimpose yourself over the Torah? Or are you trying to fit yourself into the Torah's reality? There was a famous preacher, a Magid, he's known as the Dubna Magid, he was a star pupil of the Vilna Gaon. And Dubna Magid had this wonderful way of weaving the most intricate and vivid stories, which would serve as mishalim, as parables, you know, to convey very profound ideas. So somebody once came to the Dubna Magid and he says, how do you always have the best stories to illustrate everything? So the Magid said, I'll tell you a story. He said once a person came and he discovered a little hut in the middle of a clearing in a forest, and the thing he noticed right away is that there were targets everywhere. Targets. Every tree had a target hanging. Every wall had a target. And in every one of the targets, there's an arrow right in the middle of the red circle, right in the middle of the bullseye. Hundreds and hundreds of arrows. They're all right in the bullseye. And he turned around to this archer, and he said, I've never seen anything like this. Not only you never miss, every single time you get the bullseye, every single time right in the middle. Yeah, so this is very simple. I shoot the arrows, I draw the targets afterwards. People come with their own conclusions. I know it's good. I know it's right. I know it's moral. I know it's ethical. Now how do we get the Torah to say what I'm saying? That's all wrong. That's all wrong. That's who David HaMelech frames himself. That's it. He says, yes, this is all about Torah, and I want to see wonders in your Torah, and my soul is crushed for your Torah, and I'm asking for your Torah. But that doesn't mean that I'm asking to express myself in the Torah or utilize and abuse the Torah, chas v'shalom. Go'arta zeyde marurim. Those who are the opposite of bittul, David says, Hashem rips them apart. Hashegim mitzvasecha. They're going away from the Torah. Much more than what the Chidah says. Not just they're not doing the mitzvahs. Even more than what the Malbim says. Not just that they're twisting the ideas of Torah. They have no bittul. They have no sense of, there's no sense of self, of self-proportion. Where do we fit into this? That I come with a sense of aim of a yira, a sense of awe, that I am studying Hashem's Torah. I hope I'm getting it right. I hope that Hashem's godly ideas are resonating within me. And so he makes a bracha before he studies Torah. He asks Hashem, I should be able to understand the Torah properly. Now he comes and he lectures to the Torah and tells the Torah what the Torah should be saying. And defines Yiddishkeit as per his or her own ideas or the mores of the time they live in. So that's the first notion in the detractors of David HaMelech. That's Pasuk Chof Aleph. In Pasuk Chav Beis, David HaMelech does acknowledge that he's scorned, he's mocked, he's laughed at. He doesn't really particularly like it. Who would? Who would? He says, Gal me'alai, cherpa v'vuz. David HaMelech asks Hashem to remove from him cherpa v'vuz, which could be freely translated, let's say, as disgrace and abuse. It's going to throw a free translation out there. I'm not sure that's exact, but let's say disgrace and abuse. So David HaMelech acknowledges that this is the case, and he says, please remove that from me. Now, in order to understand the meaning of Gal me'alai, what this means, the first thing we have to look at is the language Gal. What is David HaMelech saying here? This is very, very telling. Because there are other words for remove. Gal einai comes from the terminology of gilui, reveal before my eyes. But this is not reveal. Reveal from before me cherpa, reveal from before me shame, disgrace, abuse. Something doesn't make sense. So Rashi says that this word gal, the word gal, which starts the 22nd verse of Psalm 119, should not be confused with the first word that begins the 18th verse of Psalm 119. The 18th verse is gal einai. Gal einai is open my eyes. But here we say gal comes from the terminology lushin gilgul. Anybody knows what a gilgul is? What's a gilgul? What's a gilgul? The word you probably think of is reincarnation. Okay. But reincarnation really is a cycle. That's what it would be. And so we call it recycled. What do you call a bicycle? A bicycle, bi is two. And a cycle is a wheel. So a bicycle has two wheels. A unicycle has only one wheel. A tricycle has three wheels. Cycle is a wheel. And wheels are round. Wheel of fortune. I don't mean the television show. I mean people who do well. And they used to say in Yiddish, the Redel Dreitzach, you know, the wheel of fortune turns. People were once very wealthy, and the Nebuch, they reach a different ebb. You know, life is funny. Life throws all kinds of things at us. People who once fooled themselves suddenly find out that it wasn't about them. And people who are in the middle of nowhere, out of the blue, all of a sudden rise meteorically. So there's this wheel that's constantly turning. Some people call it the wheel of life, or the Gilgul HaChayim. And I don't want to go into reincarnation now. There's a specific way that's understood within the framework of reincarnation. And it's decidedly not the Sanskrit way. But let's focus just on the simple word. The word Gilgul means wheel, to turn, something which is round and turns. And Rashi brings a very interesting reference. He says, if you go back to the beginning of the Torah, it's Parshas Vayetze, and Yaakov Avinu arrives at his destination after a few detours, maybe more than a few detours. After being somewhere for 14 years, and after almost being killed, and after being robbed of everything, and after having this incredible prophecy and dream, and Yaakov finally arrives, and he says, what's going on over here? Why are you guys sitting around? What's with you people? You don't work for a living? They said, no. We all the shepherds get together, and then we take this large stone which protects the well. We roll the stone off. It's a very heavy stone. We roll it off together. And Yaakov sees Rachel coming, and he gets so excited that he is vayogel. He rolls the stone off. So Rashi says, it says vayogel es ha'evan. It doesn't mean that he revealed the well. It means he rolled the stone off. So you see, what do you roll? You roll square and triangle things? No, you roll things that are round. Round things roll. So therefore, Rashi says, Gal me'olai comes from the terminology of roll away. Roll away the disgrace. Roll away the abuse. As the Mitzudas Tzion says, in his Mitzudas Tzion goes into verbiage, he says, Gal v'seiviv. We're talking about roll away, something which is a wheel. So why are we talking about rolling something away? What's up with rolling? So the Radak says, pardon me, we'll go to Mesudas David first. Well, David HaMelech, when he says, Gal me'olai, roll it away, he's saying, Haver me'olai, cherpa bezoyein. He says, roll away the disgrace, the shame and abuse that's being hurled upon me for my keeping of the Torah. I should not be embarrassed. I shouldn't be shamed, I shouldn't be mocked for trying to build your Torah, develop your Torah, to make your Torah greater. It shouldn't be a source of embarrassment to me. So David HaMelech clearly was being bothered. He was being mocked. He was being denigrated for it. So what does he do? Zu gesund. Did he pray for his detractors to die? Did he say, I hope a lightning bolt strikes him dead? That Kishka shall fall out? No. He said, roll it away from me. They don't want to harm anything. Roll it away. So don't roll away. Like, you know, say, water off a duck's back. Roll it off. Just roll it away from me. If there's an issue out there, the issue should roll away. And roll away means without a fight, without having to be involved in a way which is all-consuming. It rolls off. We want to say that something leaves us easily. We use the terminology of rolling. The easiest way for somebody to travel is for it to roll. So roll it off. Just remove it from me, Hashem. Now let's take a look in the Radak. Who are we talking about? So Radak says, we're talking about people actually. He says, Oysam hazedim, mecharfim umevazim oisi. These same people we talked about before. These same people who mocked the notion of Torah study. These same people who maybe utilize the Torah to twist it out of its literal meaning. Who go away from the mitzvahs. Either because they're ignorant of mitzvahs because they didn't bother studying Torah. They think studying Torah is a waste of time. Or because they're studying Torah in a way which is capricious and it's wrong-headed. I don't want to bother doing mitzvahs. Or it's not just that they don't want to be bothered because they're too excited about learning. Because I believe in going away from mitzvahs. Because I twist the Torah in that fashion. So David HaMelech says, he asks Hashem that these people should be rolled away. Gala oisa cherpa me'aloi. He says, remove that from me. Let them be ashamed. Let them deal with their issues, but I want to be able to rejoice in Torah. So there's two very important things, it seems to me, that become clear here. Number one, what David HaMelech does not seek retribution. He does not wish harm or evil upon anybody. Number one, that's very clear. Roll it away, remove it. Everybody should be good. Just get it out of my way, please. I'm asking Hashem, it shouldn't bother me. Number two, there's no mitzvah to suffer. It's not good to be abused. There's a little joke, don't be offended. They say, how many Jewish mothers does it take to change a light bulb? It's okay, I'll sit in the dark. It's okay. Sometimes we think that somehow there's this macabre element to Judaism where if we suffer for it and we're tormented for it and tortured for it, it's more fulfilling. It's like the peroxide only works if it hurts you when you pour it on, which my understanding is actually not true. That half the time they put the peroxide, they put the negative thing, they put the biting stuff in, because otherwise the person, the allergic, it's not working. It's not working. It's got to be really powerful. Like, you know, if the mouthwash is so bad that I can't even... that stuff that Listerine is called? It must be really strong then. Why? Because it's so strong, I can't even breathe when I finish it. It must have killed all the germs. And what do you think? You have to be half dead to kill the germs? The germs die very quickly. It doesn't take that much to kill the germs. But we have this warped notion sometimes that if I suffer for it, that it's so good. It's like, I have this almost like, oh, people like want to, it's like a spiritual masochism. They want to, I want to be harsh and difficult, and I did it anyway. There's no mitzvah. It's okay. But don't look for difficulty. Every morning we say in our brachas, we say, Al tvi'eni l'deinu sayon. Don't bring me to the hands of temptation. I'm not looking for any tests. I'm not looking for any kind of shame or disgrace or abuse. I'm not looking for it. I would prefer that things should be easy. Remove it. Remove obstruction. Don't look for obstruction. If it comes my way, I don't shirk from it. Chas v'sholom. We have a job to do. You got to move forward. But don't look for it. One of the greatest Jews of history, bar none, is Rabbi Akiva. And yet, it is said that Rabbi Akiva, in Mesiras Nefesh, was second to Avraham Avinu. Even though Rabbi Akiva actually was killed, sanctifying Hashem's name, and Avraham walked out of the fiery furnace, and walked out of many other situations. Because Rabbi Akiva, and don't get this wrong, we're not here to denigrate Rabbi Akiva, chas v'shalom. He is one of the greatest Jews of all time, and in some ways, he even eclipses Moshe Rabbeinu in some ways. It's only a divine decree that Moshe Rabbeinu should be the one to bring his Torah and not the neshama of Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Akiva used to say, Masa yavu liyad v'akemenu. When can I experience real sacrifice? When can I make a real sacrifice for Hashem? He looked for it. He didn't shy away from it. He was ready to take it on. And we're told that b'mekayim gedolim al tamid, that this is not the level of Avraham Avinu, not look for Mesiras Nefesh. Avraham Avinu had a mission. And there was a man with a mission, which was to spread godliness. If there would need to be Mesiras Nefesh, he would make any sacrifice necessary. No sacrifice would be too great. No challenge would be too daunting. But he didn't look for it. He didn't anticipate it. He didn't wait for it. In fact, he hoped it wouldn't come. He wanted it to be able, what did he anticipate and hope for? That people should understand that there's a God in the world. Yesh balabayas l'birazu. And the Rebbe in his first Maimer emphasizes that we have to try to emulate the approach of Avraham Avinu. We shouldn't look for Mesiras Nefesh. There's a story that's told, and I can't really tell you the details to know if it's exactly true, but this is the story that's told, that in the early 50s, Rabbi Chodakov was the Rebbe's chief secretary, summoned a young man, and he asked him if he's ready to go on Shlichus. So he said, I want to go to the furthest corner of the world. I'm prepared, and that's what I want to do. I want to go to the farthest Shlichus. The most difficult Shlichus, the most difficult, that's how devoted I am. So Rabbi Chodakov reportedly said to him, in that case, you don't have to sign up. Why? Because if you're looking for the most difficult thing, that's not Shlichus. There's no mitzvah to suffer. Shlichus, I'll go anywhere. Wherever is necessary. You need me down the block, I'm down the block. You need me across the globe, I'm across the globe. Whatever is necessary. We don't have to look for something which is dramatic, or look for something which has shock value, or something which requires great sacrifice. That doesn't make a mission meaningful. It shouldn't stop us from fulfilling our missions, but it doesn't make it meaningful. So David HaMelech, on one hand, he doesn't wish harm on anybody, and he says, just roll it away. But on the other hand, he very clearly asks Hashem, please remove this. Remove these obstructions. And once these obstructions are gone, I'll be able to do what I have to do. What do I want to do? I want to be able to serve Hashem and do what's appropriate. So this is the way we understand David HaMelech's request. And I'm going to add a final little interesting thing. So there's a sefer called Elef Bina. And the Elef Bina, he says, that the end of the pasuk, Gal me'olai cherpa v'avuz, why? Ki edesecha notzarti. Ki edesecha notzarti literally means, for I have kept your mitzvahs. I've been scrupulous about the mitzvahs. So the word notzarti really, it's different than the word shomarti, but nonetheless, that's ultimately what it means. So why do we use that term, ki edesecha notzarti? Because I'm keeping your mitzvahs. So, you know, the Ibn Ezra says, remove these obstructions, this shame. Ba'avur sheshomarti et yisecha. I kept your mitzvahs. For that's not a good enough reason. I'm keeping your mitzvahs. So take away the difficulties. All I'm asking for is to be able to do the mitzvahs. Why are you giving me these problems? Roll them away. Get rid of them. So the language, the terminology of notzarti, this specific, well, let's back up for a second. Let's leave Elef Bina for a second behind. Let's go back to the Malbim approach, and then we'll see what the Elef Bina says. He says like this, what's the difference between the terminology of cherpa and vuz? So he says cherpa is other people who are shaming David HaMelech, disgracing him, calling him names, for lack of better terminology. And vuz is not that he is being disgraced or attacked, but that he is a scorn. He's the butt of people's jokes. He's a disgrace. So one is more of what David HaMelech is being attacked. He feels himself, he knows he's being roundly attacked by his detractors. And the other one is he is the butt of jokes. He's a scorn of everybody. So David HaMelech asks Hashem to remove all this from him. And he says, because ki edvesecha, edesecha notzarti. Notzarti, says the Malbim, is more than shmira. I didn't just keep your mitzvahs, I guarded your mitzvahs. He says something interesting, that when we talk about a castle or a fort, so we have this idea of a matzer would be a siege, and the ir nitzura is a fortified city. He said, I didn't just keep your mitzvahs, I guarded your mitzvahs zealously. It's like a step beyond. And I want to finish off with the Elef Bina. The Elef Bina says something like this. He says that the words cherpa v'avuz, which could be translated as the Malbim did in different ways, also have the numerical equivalent of Samoel and Lilis. And Samoel and Lilis is considered to be the male evil angel, and Lilis is the female evil angel. And what is the point of Samoel and Lilis? What does it mean that there's a Satan? What does it mean that there are satanic forces? What does it mean that it's a bad angel? So the word Satan literally means to obstruct. As it says when Bilam was going with his nefarious plans of cursing the Jewish people, a good angel came, l'satanlai, to satanize him. What does that mean, to satan him? To satan means to interrupt his way, to obstruct his way. He's actually trying to save Bilam. So Samoil and Lilith, who are these two forces, these demonic forces, their goal is to be moinea, to refrain, to restrain, to find a way to obstruct your Avodas Hashem. And how do we plan to deal with this? We plan to deal with it by, we ask Hashem to roll it away. But the Elef Bina notes that if you add up the sum total of Samoil and Lilith, you get the number 611. That's if you take the Samach Mem Aleph Lamed, and you take Lamed Yud, and Tuf, you end up with 611. Okay, fine. So he says 611, it's a gematria that most of you are not familiar with. You know Taryag, 613. But actually, the word Torah, if you add it up, is 611. Torah Tzivalonu Moshe, the Torah Moshe commanded us, Marasha Kilis Yaakov, the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave us from Hashem 611 mitzvahs. Because two mitzvahs we got from Hashem Himself. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, li'yilucha lehim achedim, that we got from Hashem Himself. So the Torah that came to us through Moshe is not 613, but rather 611. So the Elef Bina suggests that how is it that a person is able to effectively roll away the challenges? And he answers, David HaMelech answers, he says, Edesecha Notzarti. If you scrupulously keep Hashem's testimonies, which means the Torah is the key, if the Jew will utilize the Torah properly, he will immerse himself in Torah properly, then the Torah itself will eliminate the detractors. So, in other words, what's the answer? How do I deal with my detractors? How do I deal with them? Turn up the heat. You be more you. Because if they see they're not winning, and they see it's only going the other way, maybe they'll give up. Or maybe Hashem will roll it away. But the answer, that what is our answer to adversity? What is our answer to obstruction? What is our answer to difficulty? What's our answer? What's our approach? When things get dark, our response has to be to make it brighter. That's our response. And that's what David HaMelech is saying. As the Elef Bina explains it, when I have cherpa v'avuz, I ask Hashem rolls it away, and kiyad v'sechan atzarti, because I'm going to be even more scrupulous, which kind of fits with the Malbim. I'm being not just going to be shomer, as the Ibn Ezra says it, but I'm going to be nitzarti. I'll be even more exacting, even more precise, even more scrupulous about my observance. Verse 23, gam yoshvu sarim bi, the ministers or royals or leaders, regents, they got together, and what are they doing? Binid baru, they're talking about me, he says. Avdecha yasir b'chukecha. So what am I going to talk about? They're talking about me. They're making fun of me. What am I going to talk about? Your servant will talk about your Hashem, your testimonies. Same thing. So how does David HaMelech deal? Does he respond? No. He says, they'll do what they'll do, and I'll do what I do. I'm not going to listen to what they say, and I'm not going to change what they say. I'm going to do what I have to do. It's very clear. Gam yoshvu sarim bi. So the Ibn Ezra says, Kain asu sarim rabim. This is what many of the local regents in David HaMelech's time did. And bi nidberu, says the Ibn Ezra, is like vatadaber Miriam. It's like when Miriam spoke in a harsh way about Moshe Rabbeinu, it's really like saying, bi nidbaru was like saying, me they slandered. Yeah, they got together, and they were slandering me. So David HaMelech says that these very same people, Radak explains, these people, she'enim chafetzim b'teira, they don't want to learn Torah. They're yesher b'kronas, they're filling their life with emptiness and all kinds of frivolous pursuit. Medabrim bi derech gnai, they speak me, they denigrate me, they laugh at me. What's my response? So the Radak says, you know what David HaMelech's response was? V'ani eineni cheshesh. I'm not even going to listen. I'm not even responding. What will I do instead? What will my response be? V'asir b'chukecha. I will speak in your words. K'ani avdecha. I am your servant, Hashem. And I do mitzvahs ke'eved, like a servant who does mitzvahs adaynav. And that was a person who could say, hey, God, I'm doing your mitzvahs, and they're attacking me. This is not fair. You fix this up, or I'm not doing your mitzvahs anymore. David HaMelech says, I'm asking the questions. I'm being criticized. I'm being mocked. I'm going to do what I'm going to do because I'm an eved.
And an Eved is a person who follows what Hashem says. And David HaMelech says that this is something which is ongoing, says Radak. It's ongoing. It's Lashon Nifl, Nidbru. They continue to talk like this. Hasmad is Hadibur. They're always mocking me. There's another article about me in the newspaper every day. They're always laughing at the Jews who are keeping the Torah, who are studying Torah and keeping mitzvahs. Me, he says, what am I going to do? Zayin Yiddish, I'll get weiter. I go further. I move it ahead. Doesn't respond, doesn't react. This is perhaps similar to what the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya. He quotes the earlier sages saying, Kol ha-mis-avil, ha-mis-avikim, ha-menuvil, mis-navil. If you wrestle with the dirty one, you yourself become dirty. He doesn't wrestle. He doesn't respond. What's your response? My response, he says, very simple. I am an Eved Hashem, and Avdecha Yasiya B'chukecha. We'll keep learning Torah. That's our response. Not every time is a detraction or an attack do we have to respond. We got to do what we got to do. What's our response? A lot of times in the media, by the way, if you notice famous people, they never answer the question that they're asked. They'll answer a different question. They come with a prepared statement. They know exactly what they want to say. The current prime minister is a master of this. Doesn't know what he's talking about. This has the fear. They ask him a question. The Baltic nation, it's not a thing. It's not a thing. It's three countries. Not a thing. Like, it's not one of the statements they fed him. And that's how people get around media. Well, because they know what they want to say first. Whatever you're going to ask them, the answer will be the same thing. And then when you ask them the question again, as I said, they're going to repeat the same question. I beg your pardon? I change the subject. Now, eventually people pick up on it, but you don't have a quote. You need a quote to put in the headlines. He's not going to... I'm going to furnish you with a quote? I have to say what I have to say. They're not wrong, by the way. This is the correct approach. And David HaMelech says that was his approach. When he got attacked and laughed, what was his answer? He sit and argue with them. You're going to lower himself to the indignity of mocking Hashem's Torah or defending Hashem's Torah. That's really nice. Thank you very much. What's your comment? We'll continue to study Torah. The Torah is beautiful. And what do you say about this Torah says such and such and such? The Torah is wonderful. Those who study it find their lives enriched all the time. That's it. That's David HaMelech's response. Not only is David like blindly or sometimes with great effort just going to do what the Torah says, even if it becomes something which is very onerous, but actually David HaMelech says it's not onerous. The truth is that your edot, your testimonies are shashuai and they're anshei atzasi. They are the people of my advice. Literally men of my cabinet, men of my council. We'll see what that means in a minute. Okay, so let's take this pasuk. First of all, what does shashuai mean? Shashuai means, says Rashi, iskai. That's what I'm involved with. That's what I'm into. And the Mitzudas David explains when he says, Lo levad asir b'hem. Not only I'm going to talk about them. Not only that's what I'll fill my meaningful speech with, but shashua heima b'chaleis. It's what I'm involved with all the time. It's like when a person, this is what's on a person's mind. That's where you are. A person's mind wanders. Where does it wander? That's where I am. That's who I am. It's Hashem's Torah. V'yachshuvu la'anshei atzasi l'davar b'hem. It's as if, you know, a person's I'm going to have to seek counsel. What's David HaMelech's counsel? The Torah is his counsel. That's his counsel. That's what he's thinking about. That just like a person would constantly seek counsel, David HaMelech constantly seeks answers in his Torah, Hashem's Torah. That's his answer. Now, the Radak puts it a little bit differently. The way the Mitzudas explains it, and really even the way the other Mepharshim explain it, it's talking about the Torah itself as counsel. The Radak says that I'm not going to seek counsel from political leaders. I'm not going to seek counsel from people who are dealing with the outside world. Where's my counsel going to come from? My counsel will come from my friends, not from the Sarim, not from ministers who are involved in a secular and an ungodly approach. My counsel will come from those who are involved in Torah study. So two ways of understanding this. We have the Radak, and we have the concept of the Mitzudas and probably others, which is either that the Torah itself is my counsel, or that it's those who study Torah that will be able to provide counsel for me. Now the truth is that both of these interpretations, this notion of being able to provide counsel or find the counsel itself in Torah, appears later on in a Mishnah. This gets interesting.
There's a Mishnah which is found in the beginning of the sixth chapter of Pirkei Avot, which was not really a part of Pirkei Avot originally, but that's a story for another day. And the it's called Perek Kinyan Torah. And it starts off, that's what the Amram Goyim called this, the chapter of acquiring Torah. It says, Rabbi Meir Oymer Kala Isik Batera Lishma. Anybody who studies Torah, for its sake. And that's a discussion for another day. What does it mean, for its sake? But if you study Torah for its sake, a whole bunch of things are achieved, and the nan in mimenu eitz of asoshia, though others can benefit, they can find counsel and assistance. How do we know this? And furthermore, and bina and understanding, and gvura and strength. Shenemer, because it says li eitz of asoshia, for me, to me, I have, says Hashem, counsel. I have help. Ani bina, I am understanding. Li gvura, might is mine. That's a pasuk from Mishlei. So, what does this mean? What does the Mishnah mean literally? Reb Yaakov, Reb Shimshon, the Rivash, one of the Rishonim says, "Bnei Adam ne'nimimenu," that people are able to achieve counsel from this person who studies Torah Lishma. Lehimalach by le'etz v'seshia, they can get advice. So that's that. In other words, this follows the approach of Radak. That where does David HaMelech get his advice from? From people whose worldview is informed by the Torah, with the spiritual approach. If you take a look in the book of Mishlei, which we referenced before, in the book of Mishlei it says, as we quoted, that's the 14th verse in the 8th chapter, but there's a fascinating Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar that says that before the world was created, with who did Hashem seek counsel? Not that Hashem needs to seek counsel, but there's this constant proverbial counsel that Hashem sought, and the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says, Hashem saw counsel in the Torah. The Torah was God's counsel. And the Rabbi Elazar said, Mikan Amru Chachamim, from here our sages said, Kol Malchut She'im Bo L'Yoatzim, Ein Malchut HaMalchut. Any government that has no counsel, any government that has no cabinet of advisors, is not a government. You can't govern that way. And then the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says, you think we're talking about governments? Ve'im Malachim, if kings need to have counsel, Sha'ar Bnei Adam Alachas Kama V'Kama, how much more so? So where do you get counsel from? Person gets a question. We have questions to answer. We have circumstances and situations to deal with. Where are we going to get counsel from? The answer is from the Torah. What does it mean? According to Radak, it means from those who are studying the Torah. Like it says, Alei Metayda Lishma. According to the Mitzvot David, it means from the Torah itself. But Torah provides us with counsel. So David HaMelech acknowledges that he was an outsider, that in his time, the other kings in the region or regional powers laughed at him. They mocked him. He didn't go to the various sporting events, and David HaMelech wasn't involved in the cultural milieu of the day. He was a Torah scholar. David HaMelech was a big Rav. He paskened halachas the whole day. And that was his primary emphasis, was halachas, and his legacy to us is Sefer Tilim. But he spent his time studying Torah. And because he spent his time studying Torah, he said, that's my counsel. So when it says Anshei Atzasi, it shouldn't be taken literally, but it says that's Anshei Atzasi, that the Torah becomes the counsel for me, not the political arena that shunned David HaMelech, and he shunned them back and ignored them, as we see his response to it. But he finishes off by saying that Gamei Desecha Shashuai, that's my, I'm engrossed in that, and that becomes the source of my counsel. Now, we're going to finish off with a little bit of a lighter word. One second, before we do that. So, there is the Sepharno emphasizes that the lessons that David HaMelech learned from Torah is what guided him. Those were his guiding principles. That means he sought counsel. Everybody has guiding principles in life. Actually, some people have no principles. Most politicians have no principles at all. That's the problem. When you have guiding principles, you have to stick to your basics. You have to stick to your guiding principles. And if you don't waver from your guiding principles, then you'll be successful. And the Sepharno says, David HaMelech says, his guiding principles were exactly that. So actually, this Mishnah that I shared with you, to be Omer, David, B'Shem, Omer, this is the Noam Elimelech connects this Mishnah. He's the one who connects to the Mishnah to what says here in Tillim. But to finish off now with a lighter word. So the word Shashuai actually means like a game. It means to toy with. But not in a frivolous way. You toy with something or you play with something. It's David HaMelech talks about the Torah as what he had a pleasure and enjoyment. He immersed himself, but there's a certain lighthearted element to the concept of Shashuai. So the Tilul of David says that there is a famous statement made by the Chida, that that in certain communities, when they weren't sure of what to do, they'd play a Torah game. They'd open a sefer. He says it was usually a sefer of Chumash or one of the other books of Tanakh. And they would take a look at the first word at the page they opened, and they would try to gain some insight. Like when there's no rational way, you can't figure out which way to go. It's 50-50. And Reb Chaim Palagi says, in his Sefer Chaim Yeducha, he says that in the city of Izmir, which was a very powerful city, is in Turkey. Unfortunately, it's notorious because Shabtai Tzvi came from Izmir. But it was once a very powerful Jewish community. In the city of Izmir was a custom that when a child was born, so the Mialedet would usually open a Chumash. It's usually a Chumash Vayikra. And they would look at the first word, and they would say, oh, this is a sign of how this child will grow up. Somebody do it that first word. So it's almost like, it's not like study, it's almost like toying with the Torah, but the Torah is your toy also. I think this is probably the origin of, you know, people who open books of letters from the Rebbe and come out with answers. I don't think that's an absolute thing. I don't think a person is, that's what you're supposed to do. I know many disagree, whatever, that's fine. We can all agree to disagree. The Rebbe didn't tell everybody that's what you should do. The Rebbe said, stay in touch and I'll find ways to answer. The point is, the notion of opening Sfarim, and of when somebody doesn't know what to do, even almost like an toying with the Torah, but it's all around the Torah. You know, people said, we're going to flip a coin. People do that sometimes. They don't know what to do. Six in one hand, half a dozen in the other, I don't know, flip a coin. Heads or tails. So even when it comes to something lighthearted like that, we don't flip a coin, we open a sefer. And that's the idea, is that David says, even your Torah, even that's even my toy. It's not just the serious stuff. Even when it's the non-serious stuff, I'm always going back to the Torah, and that's where my counsel comes. Now imagine, if to flip a coin or open a book is where David HaMelech gets his counsel from, Allah has come for kama, when he needs real ideas and real guidance, the guidance that David HaMelech used in his life was always rooted in Torah, and so it should be for us. Our guidance, our counsel in life should always come from Hashem's Torah. And if it does, we walk in His footsteps and we will achieve the same kind of success.